So a little girl asked her mother, where did people come from? And her mother told her, God created Adam and Eve, and Adam and Eve had children, and they had children, and they had children, and that's where humanity came from. So then the girl went to her father and asked him, where did people come from? And he said, millions of years ago, there were primates, like monkeys, and we evolved from them. So now the girl's confused, goes back to her mother and said, you said God created us through Adam and Eve. Dad says we evolved from monkeys. What is it? And she said, well, obviously, I was telling you about my side of the family, and he was telling you about... All that by way of saying there are a lot of layers and there are a lot of stories within this meta story, if you will, in John's Gospel. It alludes to the one from last week, Nicodemus, and those that are coming after it. So I'm going to hit a couple of bullet points and then just ask you to ponder the thing that this time around, this story comes up every 3 years, ask you to ponder something that hit and stayed with me. First, this is the longest conversation Jesus has with anyone. So we probably ought to pay attention. And this story checks every box for people Jesus should not waste any time with. Important. Jesus' previous conversation in John's Gospel is with Nicodemus. Remember, Nicodemus comes in the middle of the night. He is literally and figuratively in the dark. And when he leaves, his last words are a question. He's still in the dark at the end of that story. And now, Jesus comes to Samaria. He's traveled long and far. He sits down by a well while his disciples go to buy food in the village, and it's noon, the brightest time of the day. Nicodemus is in the dark. This woman is in the light. She's there at noon, it says, and a lot of commentators have made much of that. The story itself doesn't imply anything about why she's there at noon, although mostly male commentators, we should remember this Women's History Month, mostly male commentators have seen this as some way of defining her morality. It doesn't say that. It is a good thing to notice how patriarchal and shaming biblical interpretation has been through the centuries. Nicodemus was confused about what Jesus means when he uses, it's a sort of play on words, Jesus uses a term that can be translated either born again or born from above, and Nicodemus doesn't quite get that. Jesus has a fondness for wordplay, it seems. Now he talks about living water that can be understood as spring water, running water, rushing water, or living water as in spiritual water. The woman takes it literally and understands it as living water that she won't have to go get anymore. It's a chore she certainly does not enjoy, schlepping back and forth to the town well. And then Jesus curiously brings up her marital status that commentators again have used to understand that this woman has some moral flaw. Except that it may well be its symbolism that those five husbands and the one who's not really a husband really refer to the empires, the dynasties that have overrun Samaria time after time after time. The Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Greeks, the Syrians, now the Romans. nations that have controlled their economy and their religion. Jesus knows what the disciples are thinking when they come back, and he challenges the way the disciples are thinking about this woman that Jesus shouldn't be talking to. He challenges their assumption that they're of a tribe that doesn't belong. And he says, they are included in God's harvest. So now, to the thing that has stuck with me certainly this week, that's been holding on to me. Jesus and this woman had something in common, something they shared. We're told early in the story and explicitly that Jesus is tired, as well he should be. He's been through a lot. He's got the authorities in Jerusalem looking for him. And we're pretty clear from the narrative that this woman has also been through a lot. Whether it's Levitical law that has forced her into marriages with the brothers of her first husband, or whether she's been divorced, whatever, hers has not been an ordinary or an easy life. It seems to me Jesus and this woman were both tired. And not just because they had physically demanding lives. They're tired of playing the roles that other people assign them, tired of having to run away to get some peace, tired of managing expectations and making explanations. They're exhausted, tired of having to deal with the punishing consequences of letting people get close to them and judge them and push them away. Tired of letting people know who they really were, of being vulnerable. I think we understand that. The tiredness of being thirsty for something that is life-giving, life-affirming, enlivening, instead of drinking from the cultural fountains that tell us to work hard, get a good job, and everything will work out right. If we'll just do the right thing, think the right way, be a different kind of person. The message of this story and the promise of the cross is that God in Christ knows our lives, shares our same experiences, that we are invited to share life with God. God has experienced being dead tired of the games. The message of the living water is the life you want has already been planted in you and is being watered day by day by day with living water. It's already yours. Jesus didn't wait to have the conversation with this woman about what was going on in her life before he offered her living water. It's already offered us, already in us. So when you feel that soul fatigue coming, trust the promise. Enjoy the wellspring of God's love that is already in you. And share it with each other. It's yours. Thanks be to God.